All right, we started the other day with Christian politics. We're moving down our worldview chart, and now we're on Islam politics. All right, so you guys did the reading, should have done the homework. What is the one word that kind of sums up Islamic politics?
Jihad.
Okay, now what does jihad mean?
Holy war.
Holy war. Okay, so remember jihad, that is going to be your key term. Your two quotes at the beginning of your chapter says, jihad has been made obligatory. What's obligatory mean? It's the root word there.
Obligated.
You're obligated. In other words, jihad for a Muslim is what? Is it voluntary? Is it optional?
It's law.
It's something you're supposed to do. If you are a good Muslim, you are supposed to participate in, remember the five pillars we covered earlier in the year, and this is unofficially kind of the sixth pillar, and officially in a lot of cases. So jihad has been made obligatory, which means that the individual should, when the occasion arises, offer even his life for the defense and protection of Islam and the Islamic State. The second one says, Islam is international in its outlook and approach and does not admit barriers and distinctions based on color, clan, blood, or territory. It wants to unite the entire human race under one banner. All right, so how is that different than Christianity in that sense? Because we have an international focus as well. We talk about missions and things like that. But what's different between this idea and what we would say is our idea of global missions? Because we would love to see every country in the world be a Christian country and have tons of Christian converts. But what's different?
They seek to kill the people that oppose what they think.
So right.
That's how they want to achieve it. Rather than trying to save people, they just want to kill the opposers.
Right. So if we come out and give you the gospel message and people reject the gospel message, what's our response as a Christian? If we come out, we give you a great gospel presentation, and nobody gets saved.
You did your job.
We did what we were supposed to do, right? We may try again. We may present the gospel to you, many more times. But we can't make you get saved. And we're not going to put a gun to your head and say, become a Christian. The difference between this idea of jihad is they're going to give you a chance to convert. In some cases, they won't. But that's the idea. And if you don't convert, now you have to pay the price. So you will be a Muslim whether you like it or not, or you will serve the Muslims whether you like it or not. That's the idea. That's the big difference that we've got going on here. So jihad or holy war is the big thing that we need to keep in mind with Islam. All right, now the first question in your book says, what are two ways in which the term jihad can be used? Because a lot of Muslims will tell you that they don't participate in this holy war. They use jihad in a different way. What do they say jihad is?
It's focused on the internal spiritual struggle of the individual or community.
Yes, so it's an individual struggle. So the holy war is not a literal war, they will say. They will say it's a personal war within myself to become more in line with what Allah has me to do. So it's not a literal war, it's a metaphorical war. Okay, so that's what they'll kind of say. But what's the other side of it, what we just talked about?
It's a war.
It might be necessary for you to lose your life or take somebody else's life in the spread of this war, in the spread of this religion. Okay, so you need to be able to kill and you need to be able to die. Those are the two things you need to be willing to do. So what most will say is, what a lot of so-called moderate Muslims would say is, well, we don't participate in holy wars, we don't blow things up. We just have a personal struggle within ourselves. But Islamic history says something different. Islamic history says they will go and kill if they need to. Okay? This isn't in your questions, I don't think. But what is, it was in your, it's one of your words of the day. It's one of your matrix categories. But what is an Islamic theocracy? It's right there in your book. You can cheat and look at the definition.
Government set up under the rule of Allah's divine sanction as expressed in Quran and Sharia law.
Yeah, so it's a national government set up under the rule of Allah's divine sanction as expressed in the Quran and Sharia law. Now, what's Sharia law? You should know that too.
Yeah.
What is Sharia law?
The law that they go by.
Yeah, it is a Muslim theocratic law. And so when you see these things about people being stoned, people being beheaded, people, you know, all these different kinds of punishments, that's Sharia law. And what Muslims want to do is not come in and adopt the law of another country, but they want Sharia law implemented. There was a talk in here, and I don't think it's in your questions, but it was one of the guys that talked about why it's not acceptable for Muslims to be in the minority in a country, if you remember reading that. Why is it not okay for Muslims to be the minority? Think about what their goals are. They want to practice their Sharia law, so as a minority, what's their responsibility? It goes back to jihad. If they find themselves in the minority in a country, what are they obliged to do? Make sure they're not the minority anymore. So if they become a majority, they can start doing their stuff. I'm going to turn this air conditioner off. They need to be made the majority, and if they can't be made the majority, they have to make as much noise, as much resistance against that law so they can get their Sharia law put into place. We're seeing this all over the world right now. It's big in Canada. It's big in England. Okay? England is the most common name right now for new babies born in England this year is Muhammad. Okay? That's how many Muslims have immigrated into England. When you think England, you don't necessarily think Islam. But that's what's going on right now. It's also big in Canada. Have you ever been to Canada? You ever go up there? If you ever go to Toronto, Toronto is a really interesting city because you'll go to Canada and you'll go to Toronto, and it's the most diverse city you've ever been to. Like, you walk around Toronto and you see Middle Eastern people, you see a lot of Asian people, and it's Canada. And you're thinking, how do all these people get to Canada? But it is extremely diverse. There are a lot more immigrants up there than you realize. And Islam is targeting Canada. That's one of the places where they're going. Okay? Number two says, how did the attitudes of Jesus and Muhammad differ toward those who oppose them? This should be the easiest question on the homework. Yeah.
Jesus prayed for and tried to help and witness to those who...
Yeah, when Jesus' disciples got a little violent, like Peter did in the garden, what did he tell Peter?
Throw your sword.
Yeah, put your sword away. That's not what it's for. We're not here to kill people. And yet, what does Muhammad tell his followers? If they don't listen to you, you have the right to kill them. A little bit of a different message. And yet, the Muslims would tell you that Jesus is a prophet and that he was just a precursor to Muhammad coming in. He was just one of the many prophets that Allah sent, and that Jesus was actually a Muslim, and he was pointing toward the coming of Muhammad. Seems to be quite a different message in the two men, and yet they would say that they're the same things. Okay, what reason do some Muslims offer in defense of bloodshed in the name of Allah? What do they usually say? What is the history of Islam? What do they say they did? The only way they only kill people when what? When did they kill people? Because they don't deny that there was violence. They don't deny that they had to kill some non-Muslims sometimes. But they say they only did it when? Think about it logically.
When they reject.
Okay. What's the excuse that people get when they get taken to court for assaulting somebody or killing somebody? What's a normal defense?
Self-defense.
Self-defense, right? They say, well, they started it, and I had to protect myself. That's exactly what Islam says. That most of the killing that they did, it was defensive. We didn't want to kill them. They came after us, so we had to react, and we had to kill them. But that, if you did the reading, you can see that that's not the case whatsoever. Because the Muslims would come in, Muhammad would come in, and he would go around to the different countries that he conquered, and he would say, you have two choices. Okay, what's the first choice, obviously?
Convert.
Become Muslims. You can become Muslims, and you can be part of this. The second option is if you're not a Muslim, what do you have to do? It eventually comes to that, but there is apparently an in-between before that. You have to pay a tax. Okay, it's down there at the, let's see what page it's on. It's at the bottom of 325. J-I-Z-Y-A. Jizya, I guess? I don't know. Jizya. That's the tax. So, if you're a non-Muslim, we'll let you stay in this country, but you have to pay this tax. And this tax is usually through the roof. And so even if you can't pay the tax and you get killed, so I give you like, you know, I tell you you have to pay me $1 million and you can't, so I'm going to kill you anyway. That's kind of what goes on here. Okay. Does this argument seem plausible in light of history? That's what we just talked about. No, because it was not a defensive battle. Most of the time they were offensive in just about everything that they did. They were conquering type people. All right, now, number 9 is a big question. The 4 points that support the belief that violent forms of jihad are intended to be enforced until Islam is a global reality. Okay, so this is the idea. They want Islam to be the global religion. Their idea is that everything started Islamic, and God is going to restore to global Islam. That's their whole idea. Make it back to what it used to be, even though that was never really what it used to be. But that's their belief. Okay, so the 4 points are this. Okay, number 1 is creation and original Islam. There we go. Creation and original Islam. Now, what is the Muslim view of creation?
They believe in Bible.
What?
No.
Is it much different than ours? No, as far as the creation goes, they would say Adam and Eve. They would recognize literal days of creation, at least a fundamentalist Muslim would. What is the difference in their creation account? What are the differences? This is important to know, because they would agree with Genesis in a lot of ways. They would say Adam and Eve, literal days of creation, but there's a couple big differences.
We're unfallen.
We're unfallen. How are we unfallen?
We were born good.
We were born good, so we would even agree with that in the sense of Adam. But they don't view Adam's fall as sin. They don't call it a fall. They just say he made a mistake, which I don't know how much different that is. But they will not call it sin. They say that we are not fallen. That's why when you do your worldview chart, they are unfallen, you know, unfallen idea. So we think we're fallen. They say we're unfallen. So Adam and Eve made a mistake. They didn't sin. They didn't fall. They made a mistake when they took a bite from the fruit. And Allah has been trying to get the world back to Islam ever since then. So the 2 distinctions between Islamic creation are, number 1, they were born Muslim. Who knew? And then number 2, it wasn't sin, it was a mistake. And now God is trying to restore the Islam that was there before. Because essentially, what does Islam mean? Mm-hmm. It means submission to God. Submission. And so, think about that.
So, what's their standard of sin?
On what?
On the standard of defining sin.
Of sin, they don't view it in the sense of how we need a savior to cover our sin. Because if they admit a sin, then we need somebody to reconcile that sin. So instead of calling it a sin, we just don't quite. And it sounds exactly the same. It's a mistake that doesn't measure up to God's standards, so we have to pray and do the pilgrimage and do the dietary restrictions and, you know, all that. So we have to do all the works to make everything right again with Allah. Right? So it seems kind of silly when you think about it, but they don't want to call it sin because the Christians call it sin, and they've got to do something a little bit different.
Do they believe Allah was perpetual?
No. They just believe he's a very impersonal God. He doesn't answer prayer. He doesn't really interact with his people. There's no anything like that. So instead of having, he's God, just like we would view God, the one true God, but they view him as kind of hands-off kind of God. No interaction with his people whatsoever. Yeah. All right, number 2 is the prophets of Islam. Prophets of Islam. Ever since the beginning of time, Allah has provided prophets to come and give some holy words to his people. And since we were all born Muslim, you know that you were born Muslim, and your parents led you astray. But you were born Muslim, just like everybody else thinks they were born Muslim. They think everybody was born Muslim. So we've got all these prophets. Who are some of those prophets? I mentioned one. Muhammad is the ultimate prophet. Who were some that came before him?
Jesus.
Who else?
Moses.
Peter.
David. Okay. A lot of those guys. Abraham. They may even. I don't know what they think about him. That's interesting. But all those guys that we see in the Old Testament, they would recognize as prophets. Now, they would say that they're all Muslim and that they all were pointing towards Muhammad, but that those guys were all prophets, and they were sent beforehand. So a lot of the Old Testament they would agree with. A lot of the Old Testament they would line up with. And the funny thing is you know that Muslims and Jews really don't like each other. And yet they would agree on a lot of stuff early in Genesis. Okay? Number three is what we just talked about, born Muslim. They believe that everybody is born Muslim and needs to be returned to that state. So Muslims need to convert all nations, either by missions or by force, so that everybody can get back to this Muslim state again. Okay, and number four is global Islam. Okay, and global Islam is that, in conjunction with the first three, that everybody will eventually submit to Allah and become Muslim nations. So global Islam. So that ought to inform you a lot about why we see these Muslim extremists going into all kinds of different countries and trying to blow up the power structure. That's essentially what we've got going on. They want everybody to convert to Islam, and they'll use the sword if they have to. Alright, now one of the tough things that they do bring up in the chapter are the Crusades. And now what were the Crusades?
Was a response to Muslim aggression.
Christian wars, what was it?
A response to Muslim aggression.
Muslim aggression? What did the Muslims invade?
Jerusalem.
The Muslims invade Jerusalem. They also threatened the eastern part of the Roman Empire, which was a, you know, since Constantine was a Christian empire, we could probably argue that, but that was the idea. And the capital city of that Eastern Empire was what?
Byzantium.
Yeah, Byzantium, which later became
Constantinople.
Okay? So that was the capital. And so when you think about your map, push up through Jerusalem, up around it, through Turkey, Asia Minor, and you'll run right into Byzantium or Constantinople. That was kind of the last defense of Europe, because Europe is on the other side of the Byzantine Strait right there. And they had taken Jerusalem, they were threatening the eastern part of the empire. So the eastern Christians send word to the western Christians in Europe and say, we need help. Send people to help us because we're being attacked. Now, what do we have to be honest about with the Crusades as Christians? What does it say in the reading? What do we have to be kind of honest about?
It was disorganized.
Disorganized. What else? Especially down as the Crusades wore on, was it still about the original mission as the Crusades kept going on? It wasn't. Yeah, people started getting a little more corrupt. They wanted to take things for themselves. It became increasingly selfish. Right. So if somebody ever brings up history-wise, well, you Christians, you did the Crusades and you were terribly unjust. Well, not all of them, but in a lot of cases, yes, Christians were unjust, they were selfish, they were greedy, they were not going over there to proclaim Christ, they were went over there for selfish reasons. Right, so we have to kind of be honest about that and say that happened. But what was the original reason why Christians went to the Crusades? Well, it was Muslim aggression. They took Jerusalem, they threatened the Christian empires, and so Christians went in and fought. Were mistakes made? Yes. Are they all wonderful heroes that we should hold up above everybody? No. Okay? That's not the case. But we need to make sure that we know what's going on in that situation. And so, really, the Crusades are not like a badge of honor. It's really more kind of like a scar on the whole Christian thing. It's kind of like the Spanish Inquisition. If you ever know anything on that. That's the Catholic Church, but still, they were literally killing people that didn't believe what they believed. You can go all the way through church history, and we find this. We find this with when the early Baptists were around, and the Protestants and Catholics alike were drowning them because of them wanting baptism by immersion. Think about that. And they said they'll give you their third baptism, and they put you under the water and don't let you come back up. That was the way that they usually executed these early Baptists. And that was Catholic and Protestant alike. So there you go. And really, most honest Christians are not sitting around going, oh, the Crusades were awesome. Most Christians are sitting around going, all right, that was a mistake. People shouldn't have done that. They kind of messed up on it. And it wasn't the only thing that the church messed up on during those years. And if you think about the Middle Ages, the church was not really the church like we know the church. It was very Catholic and very corrupt at that point. Okay? All right, now, the last thing in your chapter on page 329 was a pop culture connection, and it mentions a movie. Anybody ever seen that movie, Kingdom of Heaven? No? It starred Orlando Bloom as a crusader, which should probably make you say, all right, that guy was a warrior. Because he's like the prettiest dude ever. But he was the warrior that went in. And it's one of those, and it's a, the reason why I mention it is because it's typical of our society today with movies, because a lot of people love the movie and they lifted it up as kind of this epic historical kind of thing. But a lot of the scholars came in and said, all right, this is totally inaccurate. You're making the Crusaders look like barbarians, and the Muslims are all wonderful people that were victimized by what was going on. But in our culture, anything anti-Christian is popular, and so we do it that way. Now, the irony is that Muslims would agree with us on creationism. And what do we get drilled at in the science thing more than anything else? Oh, you silly Christians, you believe in creation. Muslims are absolutely anti-homosexuality. In fact, if you are homosexual in a Muslim country, you probably won't live much longer. Okay? And so Ahmadinejad in Iran came out several years ago and said that there were no homosexuals in Iran. And probably you probably wouldn't admit it too much if you were over there, because they'll kill you. And yet, all we hear about in the homosexual movement is the bigoted Christians. You'll never hear about the Muslims that hate it just as much. So it's quite interesting how our society has moved Islam into a place of reverence because of multiculturalism.